Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, February the 9th, 2016, and this is our 300 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with their amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And I want to thank James from North Wales, Pennsylvania, for paying to sponsor hosting Michael's hours on the web. So thank you very much, James. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Curtis.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, welcome back. And this is like a milestone. This is hour 300. This is a lot of hours talking about this very interesting subject, which spans to, gosh, the Urantia book and to Riley and so many things. The Cassini spacecraft, the photographs from the Cassini, Riley's manuscript, The Coming of Tan, all his wild symbols that he does. And how are you?
I'm good. Yeah.
Good. Well, the end of January, Paul J.S. sent me this interesting, fascinating set of maps. And so I showed it to a few people, and then I sent them to you, and there's 17 of them, or 17 or 18. And then I was going to post them on the site because I've showed them to other people, and they thought they were very interesting. Like, it shows of the world divided into seven sections, and each color contains a billion people. And to see where all the people are, and or more people live inside this circle than outside of it, and countries that have McDonald's, and people drive on the left side of the road, and England has never invaded these countries, and the world's internet connection in 1969. Now, that's what interested Lawrence. He thought that was really interesting. It showed between, like, Los Angeles and Utah, and he... I'll read an email he sent about that. I was fascinated with the one that says, countries that don't use the metric system. Or a sad one is the highest paid public employees in the U.S., and almost all of them were football coaches and basketball coaches. But I could not find it on the internet. I don't have a link, and maybe Paul can send that to me. But I have that up there. And then I had an interesting comment. I have The Coming of Tan on Amazon. And this fellow, Brendan, he writes, hello, is this the old version of The Coming of Tan that you're selling, or the later Millennium Edition, And I write back and I said, hello, Brendan, I published his manuscript in 1995, and this is the second printing. Beautiful. It is the older The Coming of Tan. The Millennium was done by someone else with Riley's approval, but full of mistakes, starting with the forward spelled F-O-R-W-A-R-D. I heard at the bottom of the first page doesn't continue to the next page. It has been a very bumpy road with Riley. Too bad he went with Eron instead of staying on the subject. Then I said, check out helloearth.info. You'll see I continue to podcast with Michael. Very interesting. Too bad Riley didn't join in. It would have been over the top. Kind regards, Curtis. And why I'm reading this, because he wrote back this nice note. He says, hi, Curtis, thank you for your response. I just ordered a copy from you since this is the edition I was looking for. I can tell that it is much better than the Millennium one. I've been listening to Riley's audio version of the book and have become fascinated with what he had to say. I'm excited about getting the book, and I'm currently listening to your podcast. Thanks for sending over. Riley seemed like a real character, and I could see how it would be a bumpy road. I believe you were with Riley on his first Howard Stern appearance, which was his most interesting visit. I think his further visits and the show he had on Sirius would have stayed interesting if he had stuck with you over Eron. Thanks again. Looking forward to the book. Signed, Brandon. And then Lawrence wrote this about these fascinating maps. Hey, Curtis, thanks also for the maps you sent. Really interesting. People would benefit seeing these and maybe open up their eyes as to how lopsided we are here in North America, and also how good or bad we have it here as far as things. An interesting one for me is America in 1969 with the internet connections. I really think this relates to the space program, the DUMB, the underground bases, Palo Alto, California, and commercial applications, research, extraterrestrial technology, back engineering programs. The Tesla equation is probably the most important part of our lives to make it better. I wrote you a letter about a year ago, and I believe you have it on your website. This is where I will review and start to think about how to tackle the serious question. Again, get back to me on your thoughts about Harmonic 288. Oh, that's another reason why I wanted to read this. And did you ever hear about 432 hertz versus 440 hertz? And then he has three links in here which are very interesting about harmonics and vibration. Signs at Lawrence, and underneath he says, the hertz symbol, HZ, is the unit of frequency in the International System of Units and is defined as one cycle per second. It is named for Heinrich Rudolf Hertz, the first person to provide conclusive proof of the existence of electromagnetic waves. One of the unit's most common uses is in the description of sine waves and musical tones, particularly those used in radio and other audio-related applications. It is also used to describe the speed at which computers and other electronics are driven. So, Michael, you have that whole background of vibration.
And yeah, vibrations are what is, mixed in our lives, in the world of vibrations, whether they're mechanically induced or electromagnetically transmitted, is still vibration. But it kind of gives you a hint that the whole universe is really vibratory, and there are many dimensional levels that have everything to do with vibration. One of the things that was so interesting in early experiments was resonance. When you have resonance, you can like the opera singer and the wine glass. When it hits that resonant point, the glass oscillates, self-oscillates because of resonance, starts vibrating, and then if the tones are strong enough, it fractures. And this is really interesting to see, you don't have to visualize it, you can just see it happen. And then there's experiments in fidelity where, old audio guys, would try to experiment with the same recorded voice of that singer who did break the wine glass. And it was very difficult to do that because there are subaudible tones that are mixed in that. That make the vibrations begin to happen. So the fidelity or the trueness of the oscillations were not reproduced in exactly the same way. Could it break the wine glass just simply because of frequency, pure sine wave frequency. So,
could you explain why it broke the glass? Is it because it came up with the exact same frequency?
It's called resonance.
Or the exact same same number of vibrations per second?
Well, the vibrations per second are essentially a point of tuning when it became. That's where the art of tuning in your radio with the old-fashioned dial or the analog dial. You mechanically tuned a resonant circuit, and in terms of the audio would be the opera singer would increase the intensity of their voice and change its pitch, having within their normal acoustic phenomenon of their own voice multiple frequencies that conjoin together, harmonize, you might say, and create internal wave structures that are both coherent and incoherent. They move in perfect symmetry, and then when they don't, then they have interference, and the mechanical interference sometimes is what causes the glass to be unable to retain its vibration. But vibration, of course, was something that Tesla did, and he did it subacoustically to the resonance of an entire building. The building almost fell down, right? So that's all about vibration, and Hertz is great name for that. It's basically saying cycles per second from peak through valley to opposite end of a cycle. People, when we look at things electrically, it goes through a zero and then it goes negative. So back to zero again. So if you start off at zero, going positive, goes back to zero, goes through negative, and then finally returns back to positive. I mean, back to zero. And it's a idea of a Hertzian wave, sinusoidal, smooth. But then in the digital world, you have square waves and pulses, which have rise times, which are much more difficult to transmit because they exceed many times the ability for things like electromagnetic impulse to traverse the copper medium because of limits in its frequency and get lost. It generates something called impedance, and it destroys itself. So
impedance.
That's why, it destroys the signal. That's why there's limits on how fast. Although you're running at something like, which if it were a sinusoidal wave, would be able to traverse the copper medium of pair of wires, but as soon as it becomes digital, it degrades the pulse to a point where the pulse is really trying to find its point where it can make it down the line, but that is so far below the intelligible rate and so distorted, and now you've got problems with actually functioning and decoding it. Codecs, coder decoders have a need for pure signal decode that. In the spiritual world, which is probably something that people would want to know, because this is about spirit. I'm going to move over from residence into the spiritual realm, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And you ever wonder why the number 7 is considered the lucky number?
Well, yes, I have wondered about that. When Riley does these symbols, he had threes and sevens.
Yeah.
Three of these, seven of those.
I'm going to explain three and sevens right now.
Okay.
Might take up the entire rest of the podcast. But the idea is frequencies, interactions. We understand that the Father is considered the first source and center, the origin of origins. It was the origin before the origin of the second source and the third source, which makes up the number 3, or the what is known as the Holy Trinity. The Holy Trinity bases itself on the fact that they needed to exist before anything could be done. Reality could take place. The interference and interaction between the Trinity creates the reality that we live in. Now let me start by saying, if the Father is alone and is uninterfered with, in other words, unperturbed, there is nothing. Right? If a reed or an item is standing straight up and it's dead calm, nothing perturbs it, it'll stand straight up.
Yes.
But there's an action such as wind blowing against it, it begins to vibrate or bend or something like that.
Okay.
And we can see that in terms of, you know, the calmness. And you look at a forest and you say, oh, the forest is just standing there. And then you can see, depending upon your viewpoint, let's say you're looking down upon a forest because you're on a hill, then you can see the actual movement of energy over across the top of the trees, and you can see the energy wave or the wind, yeah? And
mm-hmm.
and know that the wind is behaving itself as like pulses, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, you might say, he stood solemn and unperturbed and brought forth the second source, you know, and where they came about ended up immediately creating the activity that created the impression of the other two. So somehow, very difficult way to perceive, from one thing became three. And now we know these three have distinct, you might call them, functions. You have the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. The Spirit interacts with the Father, creating the interaction which creates the image of the Father, thus the Son. So, how does 7 come out of 3? Well, first you have 3. The first source, second source, and the third source, the Father, Son, and the Spirit. Okay, they make up 3, but now we need 4 more. How do you get that interaction, or that other 4 more? It is from the interplay between all 3 in different ways. So let's take it. We have 3. Let's make them all work together in unity, in completeness, as a central point. And this would be upon that plane. 1, 2, 3, Trinity, all working together. On the opposite side of the scale, we have the interaction between, let's say, the Father and the Spirit that creates number five, Spirit five, with the characteristic of the Father Spirit. In this modality between Father and Spirit, Father Spirit sort of is looking for the fulcrum, the center, the triunity. In an action in our lives, it drives us to look for this extra piece. This Holy Spirit drives us to look for this extra piece, and it ends up being the Son or the second source. And this is how this characteristic of the Spirit drives people toward finding the Son. Biblically, it was said the Spirit, when he is, will not speak of himself, but what he hears, that shall he speak. Basically, it amounts to the interaction between the Father, Son, or the Father Spirit looks and drives one toward connecting with the Son, because it's the missing part. And if you're a living being, living will creature, sensitive to the resonances of the Holy Spirit, as well as the Father himself, fractal himself installed in you, in our lives, in our actual being, then we are driven to find the Son. Now, the next point over, we have essentially five. We're looking at now the Son to the Father. Now, in the Son to the Father, again, drives person to look for the higher spiritual realm to get the more completeness. Wonderful part about the energies of the discovery between Father to Son is that it drives the person to interact with the spirit part, the spiritual aspect, and that opens up channels of revelation and knowledge, because that spiritual channel is not so much of its own doing, but it is of the doing between the Father to Son relationship, but the Son relationship back to the Father is driving the person intelligently, many times because of the nature of the Son, which has very good connections to, you know, the human creation, you know, because with the completeness of the Son's bestowals, you might call them, down to these different levels of creation and to the final level of mortals, gave the relationship so that the individual now finds and is able to drive forward under the pressure to find that spiritual completeness, are many times already being driven through to find the Son by the Spirit Father interaction. So we have that. So now we're at one more, six, looking for the seventh one. So at the seventh one, which is Spirit Father, is one in which by interaction on a purely spiritual point drives an individual to find the truth in a human form or living interaction, not so esoteric. And this they find in the Son. All these things come together for the application of the seven spirits that are before the throne, representing the seven natures of discovery of divinity, the characteristics of divinity. When one functions in them, begin to interact with the natures of divinity and begin to realize, you know, the fabric of the universe. Ultimately, when they synchronize, they form a factor of something that is akin to what we would call love. That's why the definition is that God is love. Because love is this harmonized and non-interfering interaction between all, whether they be one with another, three acting together, but ultimately all of them flowing together without incoherence, without destructive it's not destructive resonance, maybe, where it's overpowering. Not a resonance, it's more like a destructive.
You mean like feedback?
Yeah, like feedback or something like that. You know, mm-hmm. It's not pure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you look at that. Now, you see the interaction that people say, you know, they're discovering truth, or they're discovering, some people discover through very spiritual channels, therefore their energy somehow hooked up between either the Father, Son, meaning the Father Spirit, or the Son Spirit, or the Spirit alone circuit. The Spirit is definitely involved in the discovery and perception by their interaction with this nature of the spiritual realm. Can take it another way too, you know, it depends upon the interaction. It becomes highly intellectual than it is many times through the Son, Father, Son circuit. Okay. When you look at the on the top of the Michael Connection page, there's a quote right on there about science and mind and facts and love and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see.
Okay.
Yeah. You're what?
I'm going there also, Chris.
Oh, yeah. Go to the micro connection. And on the top, you'll find, let me see the exact quote.
Okay, still getting there over here.
Oh.
Sorry, it's just... Okay, I guess it was in, it was in part one.
Mm-hmm. It shows a little bit, you know, this quote from the Urantia book, which comes from paper 111, 6.6.
Yeah, I see it now.
Yeah. And it shows them sometimes the interaction between the spiritual or the factual realm. And these are things that are spiritual, but are, you know, we don't consider them sometimes that way. But it says, science is the source of facts, and the mind cannot operate without facts. Again, one of the interesting things I learned was our mind is a very sophisticated receiver of many things, an interpreter of sensory input, but also is able to gain perhaps affinity or resonance with the various spiritual truths that are functioning as we tune into them. And science is the source of facts, and the mind cannot operate without facts. They are the building blocks in the construction of wisdom, which are cemented together by life experience. Man can find the love of God without facts. And then what circuit would that be? And man can discover the laws of God without love. And what circuit would that be? But man can never begin to appreciate the infinite symmetry, the supernal harmony, the exquisite repleteness of the all-inclusive nature of the first source and center until he has found divine law and divine love and has experientially unified these in his own evolving cosmic philosophy. And this cosmic philosophy is the interaction between life experience and the motivations that are impressed upon an individual through these seven spirits. Now, these seven spirits, when giving an individual, gives them high ability, especially if they're highly resonant. And it is a result that an individual like that is less confused. Things seem more simple because they become something in some activities like very much like common sense. But to a confused person, it's not common sense. You know, it's like, how did I ever figure that out? I mean, it was so simple the way they explained it, but, you know, I've been trying to figure that out forever. But the common sense is because of the acuity of the individual working with different segments of the seven spirits, which give about something what people call just plain luck. But it's not. It's an ability for a person to steer their way through life and actually have advantage because of the affinity of the individual toward the aspects of some of these spiritual realms. But gaining through that a lot of wisdom, which can be, you might say, the actual construction of the divine nature. So there was a lot in terms of being involved in the early outpouring of concepts of gaining, attaining wisdom. But without the Father Fractal, without the divine voice, the thought adjuster in the consciousness of a human being, many times confusion would reign and the inability to place the higher aspects of the divine nature into play, and sublegating the base material nature, the animal nature, in its place, you know, and pushing that down becomes, you know, the animal nature becomes something that is just a, you might say, almost a given, automatic, if you are moving toward the divine, because it becomes less important. And whether one works exclusively on the scientific side may render themselves crippled on another side, another interaction, because the Father to the Son gives many things which are very close to the interaction of intelligence and mind. The Urantia book in its form that we have, having the contributors of various celestial personalities, was commissioned by the Son. It's the Son, Jesus Christ, said the world was confused, and even religions were confused. And they realized that in order that certain religions, including the Christian religion, would not become overly imbalanced and the world would not form itself in proper relation to the seven spirits, it would need to be, you might call it, challenged. So it would never become totally unified in one solid, immutable form, because it was never meant to be. I mean, Christ did not want to create another religion. It is this interaction between the human being and the divine nature that it was all about. That in such will bring forth the divine will in the planetary consciousness of the world. You know, there was a request that went out to Jesus Christ. He said, "Oh Lord, why don't you teach us how to pray? Because there's, you know, in there's so many different formalities in prayers." And we see that even in religion today, there's formalities. But when it came down to really understanding the purpose of prayer, came down that in the end it says, "Father, in art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." How does it get to earth as it is in heaven? Does the celestials who are in heaven come over here? That is just a transplanting of it. It is a desire of that prayer to facilitate and bring to reality and nurture truth, the interaction of truth in the lives of individuals, the divine nature, that the divine will be found on earth as it is in heaven. And it's an interesting place, heaven, because you don't have, simplistically, these androids running around that are all geared to a central computer. This is not it at all. It's much freer. It's much like individual personalities. But individual personalities have the uniqueness of the divine nature and the different touches of the seven, which makes up the completeness of it all. And in the seven developmental areas of an individual's life, you can have the relationship in the actual development of the real personality experience that makes up a truly completed spiritual individual. And that requires interaction. Definitely is an important part of the attainment of the divine nature. We participate in it, not to the point of becoming perfected in it yet, but when we do, we become finaliters and essentially a completed new work that may bear in itself uniqueness, yet a classification. Mortals are destined to become finaliters if they want, but can linger around at various lower levels of being and not be able to become great teachers as Danos, tremendous truth teachers and messengers as the mighty messengers traversing around the universe. But these are individuals that have completed the course. But the beginning of it all starts with just being able to be motivated by the elements that make up God. And they form in those seven distinct ways. although they're made in these mysterious ways in terms of the Book of Revelation or the seven spirits before the throne, this interaction was to give the visual, the idea to understand the distinctiveness, but then its relationship in the individual. The ideal is that philosophically and understanding of it to bring about also the hunger and the thirst for the completeness within it, and then gain extra-dimensional wisdom that comes from the spirit circuit, or the spirit circuit is the one that says that which you hear, that which you speak. The spirit will not speak of himself, but that which he hears, that is what he speaks. Essentially a channel of information in which other entities can move, such as the Shahurus himself, who uses, as well as your own interaction on a personal level with higher destiny guardians, personal guardians perhaps, even guardians of destiny, which the Shahurus are in their activity with human race. So that's a little bit about resonance and vibration and the seven. But when it comes down to the revelation of greater truth and the purpose of life, you know, how we get there is a personal choice toward completeness. You know, myself asking, now, what is the purpose of life, and having a veranda deck, Most High Observer, come, you know, Most Highs, come forward and say, it is to be as I, a being of light, infinite wisdom, absolute perfection in terms of having the veranda decks were absolutely faithful, filled with absolute wisdom and knowledge. And we're, you might say, the guardians of life. But to become as them requires traversing many steps of development. But it's unique. It's according to your own choices many times, and your own explorations. And they're harnessed under the, might say, the resonant activity that is out there, but now impinging upon your spirit or your very soul. And it also impacts your mind and intelligence. It renders confusion and misunderstanding in terms of enlightenment. Yeah, becomes more or less clear. What could be simply considered was confused in our minds, and it's not common sense, but what can be open to us now becomes common sense when we understand the interaction that are necessary to bring about the result of the new being that is being created in your life experience between yourselves and the divine. Islam practices physical bowing many times a day. In that interaction is what would be considered hopeful conjoinment with the spiritual realm. But it doesn't always happen. That physical movement doesn't make the individual more perfect. So, Christ had a way of saying, when you pray, don't pray to be seen of men, but instead, find yourself a solitary place, like a closet, and in there pray. That between yourself and the interactions between the seven spirits and your very fundamental solitary voice of the divine, the Father fractal in you, and its impingement with the interaction of whatever else you relate to, will bring about greater and greater wisdom, greater and greater understanding. Yirancha book helps, but what helps you even more is your interaction between these powerful energies that pervade the entire universe. So,
About 10 minutes ago, you said, you may have said, I believe you said, mm-hmm. the Urantia book was commissioned by Jesus Christ?
Yes. The Creator Son commissioned it to be done. It took place in the experimental country of the United States. For some reason, he went to Ohio. I think it was Ohio. But anyway, found its way into reality through the spirit channel. But there were many, you know, different personalities that contributed to it. And it wasn't something as it was done by a question and answer session. But many times to give a more complete answer required a composing of an illustrative composition within the limits of human understanding, or our own human understanding with the limits of the English language. And by the way, I was so amazed, every time I think about it, that English language was spoken in the New Jerusalem, and there was, for me, a language I just simply spoke. Well, I did hear other languages. They understood, even if that wasn't their first language, they understood my English words, you know, because of the extra dimension of telepathic abilities. So I got my message across. But it, in terms of speaking to me, there was audible language as well as inaudible telepathic communication. And English was there. But they used English. I think English is a language that completely grows and continues. It is a language that is, you know, gone around the world, just about anywhere. There's a joke that says, if a person speaks three or more languages, what is he called? And someone said, multilingual, I guess. Oh, yeah. What if he speaks two? Well, I guess that's bilingual. What if they speak just one? And then this comment, joke really is American. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is because of the fact that English became worldwide as a fundamental language to do business, to do anything around the world, because of the function with England's imperialistic movements around the world. Until I think in the maps around the world, you show an area in which England went around the world. Every country that they influenced one way or another.
Yes, that was England has never invaded.
Yeah.
It showed 22 countries in the entire world that it never invaded.
Yeah. And also the influence of England around the world. So that's one of the reasons English propagated around the world. But there are, you know, languages that are, you know, have gone nearly extinct. Many of them have Sumerian language and these archaic languages. But when it comes down to modern languages that existed, you know, today, it means, you know, in Hawaii, the Hawaiian language is going under a type of partial renaissance to hope to not allow it to become extinct. However, it makes a move because there are so many words that are incompatible with our present mode of culture or our modern society that do not fit into, you know, there's no words to describe. So when you hear a person trying to talk in Hawaiian about cell phones and things and text messaging and stuff, they have to come up with English because there's, so it ends up with kind of a garbled Hawaiian, but there, a lot of times there's enough common Hawaiian words to give you an idea where the structure goes. But it's only, you might say, trying to preserve a bit of culture. Is that right or wrong? It's hard to say, you know. But the culture inevitably, you know, adapts if it is a culture that will become great in its position in the world. That's why English, the American English, is not the same as the British English. It's become its own because of the many different cultures that contribute to it and many different unique slang words that are really have a cultural basis from the immigrants that came and made up America's. And Hawaii's what is called Pidgin English is really made up of many different real international words from different languages.
I love Pidgin English.
Yeah.
So it's just great.
Yeah. Except for some words which are like, I don't have the word for this, but you know what I mean. It's that word is the kind.
The kind? Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where you got to kind of almost be telepathic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I worked with a technical writer, Jesse Bowman, on Oahu. And at one time he tried to describe the word aloha in English. And he just had such a difficult, he finally gave up. He said, I don't have the English words for it.
Yeah. Because it's such a, it has practical aspects like hello, goodbye, mm-hmm. you know, and then there are other adjectives that help describe it. Mm-hmm. You know, when you add it to aloha, but aloha standing all by itself has aspects which are highly spiritual and actually have a lot to do with the first element of attaining a divine nature, which is, you might call it brotherly love or different aspects mm-hmm. of love or spiritual nature, you know. Some people say that it comes from the ha, aloha. Ha is like spirit, so aloha is like a God spirit, you know. So almost like, you know, remember that. So I've attempted to explain some of the aspects of the seven spirits or the modality toward divinity through the interaction between the divine voices that are out there. There are seven divine voices ultimately leading us toward becoming a new creature, a new being, essentially tuned in to the divine voice. That's how a more perfect universe is made, a universe of light and life. It hasn't reached there yet. Our planet hasn't reached light and life, but it can approach it as one of the great experiments. The United States gets back on track and begins to contribute. And then the worldwide contribution would be seen. And that's why the Yerontia Book came through the United States. It's not to say that truth will be limited to the United States. No, it's being spread out about as many ways as possible throughout the world. But there are people who always cloud the issue, come up with hopeful concepts of a better way, which is nothing more than reflecting an older way that didn't work. So ultimately, I'm trying to explain the real way in which light in life comes into being. You might have different personalities, people with interaction on a different way of finding truth. But yet, if one understands the nature of the seven spirits' interaction with the individual, you'll begin to realize, oh, they're often this aspect of motivation to discover and to become, you might say, resonant to the different voices for action. We're not dead creatures. We live, we move, and we have our being in that vibratory nature of the divine structure of, you might call, what is reality.
Well, let me get to John from Columbia's his email. I'm gonna skip over Al's and Calvin's for now. We'll get to them later. Subject: congratulations on reaching 300 hours. Hello, Curtis and Michael. Congratulations on reaching the 300th recording. Your work together since 2007 has been greatly appreciated by so many of us. Michael, do you think it's possible that after his passing, Riley Martin woke up on the New Jerusalem to continue his training instead of waking up on the mansion worlds after death? His message to Michael after his passing to follow through may have come from him there. They have all seven levels of training there, just like on the seven mansion worlds. It seems possible to me, since he had a special calling. Keep up the great work, both of you. Signed, John in Columbia, Maryland. Well, that's a different question, Michael.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that we wonder about, because I often wondered about the fact that there are many indicators that Earth human life that's visited there, and Riley and myself are a testament to that reality. But what about the souls that are of people and the consciousness of people who have passed on? That relationship probably can be assured that it will be taking place there. Because there is a necessity. There is also it being prepared for a much grander, a larger group of human citizens that from planet Earth will be prepared there for universe service in one way or another. As well as moving on, they could very well move on to mansion worlds. And I've been actually, graduate. No, it doesn't have to graduate in a particular level, but they can move through a particular level. And then there's a stall, there may be a stall in an individual's development, and then they are pushed toward the mansion world. It looked to me that the movement up through the teachings there, the seven different schoolrooms, were like an accelerated understanding. It had to require life experience, but also it also required for some of these people the understanding of the human experience that they were experiencing on a very close relationship. In other words, they can come here and study our struggle. But for us who have gone through the struggle, become resonant to the divine voice, it would become a very like a waypoint to another part of the universe. So yeah, he could very well have received his, you might call it a second incarnation, second body. Yeah, to start a whole another development, which is not prone to the weaknesses of the first.
That sure, I was, sure would I was, be interesting.
Yeah, what I'm reminded of was when I had to leave, and I knew I was going to leave, I asked my guide. He was became such a nice guy, a great friend. I just didn't want to lose him. And you know, I asked if I, when I returned, he said, you return here, you'll be coming back. And I don't know if Riley was taught that, but I was assured that I would be coming back. They even showed me a room where, you know, we're being prepared for people like myself. And indicated that for myself, it would happen. For Riley, he died. Then it is, he can traverse much greater distances. As a, you might call it a transportable soul in the dimensional tunnel. The dimensional tunnel is what requires a spirit realm individual to move. It's the one that many recognize as the light. Yeah. Yeah. You see the light, which is like in this tunnel-like thing, and you get transported. I went through a type of it, but it was capable of physical movement, and that's when I visited the Veranda decks. I said I entered into this light, but ended up in dimensionally transported. But for much, I believe for much greater distances, perhaps the soul transport through that is much more practical, where there was an actual, you know, physical space for this life that I had to walk in. It might be a different although very similar transport for Riley or for any other soul that's passed on. For myself, again, I was told I was going to go back. I wanted to, yeah.
Well, when is that time going to come?
Pretty soon. Yeah. It won't be because you're going to blow ourselves up. It will be maybe a time in which is very serious in terms of the problem planetary-wise. Our planet may come near an extinction-level event. And everybody's kind of pointing towards something like that. A struggle, you know, because nothing really got completely vaporized. It was like a kind of a starting over. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, we could close if you like, or if you want to.
Yeah, we can close now. I believe it becomes a little bit too much in one space.
Okay. Well, we'll get to Al's comments next week, and Calvin's also.
Okay.
All right, Michael.
All right, aloha.
Aloha.